In November of 1977, moviegoers were presented with the fictional experience of a town dealing with the unexplainable UFO phenomenon in Steven Spielberg's Close Encounters of the Third Kind. One of the classic scenes is the town's police force chasing brilliantly lit UFOs over the interstates and back roads of the beset upon town. 11 years later would see the scenario seemingly reversed when an Australian family of four were reportedly pursued at speeds of up to 125 miles per hour along a stretch of desert road by an unknown object. The four family members would claim the object even landed on the roof of their car and felt the vehicle being lifted into the air. This case file joined the theorists as they packed their bags for an Aussie cross-country UFO trip in The Knowles Family UFO Attack.
Welcome to Alien Theorist Theorizing Case File 265. When aliens attack, the Knowles family encounter. I'm Braden.
I'm Zell.
I'm Dan.
And I'm Andrew.
Woo!
You heard that right. When aliens attack.
Yeah. So this was like normally when animals attack, not anymore. I tell you, I don't know what the Knowles family was like before the attack, but they seem like shells of humans after.
Defeated humans.
Like, you want to drive anymore? No.
No.
You want to go back? No.
Well, buddy, listen, like, you got to, there's hesitancy getting behind the wheel after a fucking car accident. Imagine after this shit. I'd be like, nah, fuck that shit. I'll walk, thank you. I'm good.
So this case is really great. Number one, it's an Aussie case, which are always super fun.
Aussie.
Well, it was good. It was nice to know, because when they were talking about speed limits and speed and distance, I was like, oh, I understand all this.
Yeah, I know these. I get these
civilized. I know these references.
These units of measurements make sense to me. They're not all arbitrary or named after parts of the body.
as soon as we to pick this one, and I started going through it, I'm like, oh, this would be, there's so much good material for like skits and shit. And I'm like, literally the only, like, we're terrible at all accents, but I can't even make Australian sounds come out of my mouth.
Oh,
it's a tough accent.
Like, I can't at all. Like, I listen and I'll try, and I, there's no way.
I can say razor blades. That's it.
Say it.
Say it.
Razor blades.
Yeah, that's pretty good, actually. That's way better than anything I can do.
That's it, but that's all I got. Good day, rise of blights.
That's pretty good.
So this case file takes us back to January 20th of 1988, and the Knowles family...
Great fucking year.
was traveling on a family trip cross-country from the city of Perth, from where they were from, over to Melbourne, which they would have passed through a number of...
It's pronounced Melbourne, actually.
Melbourne.
They'll make fun of you if you say Melbourne.
Okay.
Melbourne.
So how do you pronounce Kuma Bigadup?
Kuma Bigadup.
Yep.
You had that one right, I think.
All right. What about... this one's easy to pronounce. They probably would have... They may have passed through the town of Salmon Gums.
The Melbourne... is all the Aussies are going to react just like we did when Dan said Newfoundland.
Yeah.
Right? They're all going to be like, come on. That's hilarious.
What was it? What, salmon what?
Salmon. Salmon gums. S-A-L spelled like salmon gums.
Funny
like
enough, the fish. We live close to a salmon arm.
This is true.
Okay. Right?
True.
So I think
it's gums.
Yeah, salmon gums, right?
Salmon don't
I
have
think
gums,
it's part of the
when you're arms.
When you're a British colony, you have to have some sort of, you know, salmon
body
name.
Like a fish with a body part it wouldn't normally have.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a salmon tail somewhere.
100%.
Right. What about cocklebitty?
Yeah. I like cocklebitty. Yeah, that describes me in a nutshell.
The Knowles family probably would have caught, it would have been just a little bit past Cocklebitty, as they were nearing the city of Mundrabilla. These are great names. I just like
just call Byron and ask for clarification. Yeah.
The family was driving in their 1984 blue Ford Telstar sedan with luggage, according to some reports, that was on a roof rack, supposedly.
So National Lampoon style.
A little bit.
Stacked to the tits.
So Faye Knowles and her three sons, Patrick, who is 24, Sean, who is 21, and Wayne, who is 18. Sean was driving at the time, and his older brother was in the seat beside him. So they were on a road near Mundrabilla. I hope somebody corrects me for all of these things.
Mundrabilla.
Which is a small village about 750 miles east of Perth. So it's about halfway on the trip, like this, the road that they were taking, I assume, because there's only really like one road that runs all the way there. And this was on the what is known as the Eyre Highway, which is in the vast desert of southern Australia. And I think people often forget how much of Australia is unpopulated and is just uninhabitable.
Yeah, desert. Isn't it like all the middle, basically?
Pretty much 99% of Australia is just uninhabitable.
Like, and all of the population lives on the coast.
What's that clicking?
Oh.
Just started.
Somebody's phone.
Could have been a phone.
Was it me?
It's gone.
Oh, weird.
Anyways. Yeah, and Perth is like, I'm pretty sure it's the most isolated like big city in the entire world. It's like 2,000 plus kilometers from the nearest next city. This is the fucking way out there. The next city is like Adelaide, which is like 2,000 K away.
Yeah, and it was like, they'd already been on the road for about 13 hours straight because I guess the family had just kind of decided to do shift driving all the way there. So,
Okay. Well, you know what? For some reason, I didn't read the shift driving. So I thought Sean had just crush the third, and I was like, dude, I've done that.
What do you
I've
mean? Done just that from, fucking pop a couple amphetamines and drive for
drive forever.
350.
No, dude, I've
with
done
all your
that.
Family
I've,
in the car.
I've done that. I've done a 14 John to Kelowna, which is like 12, and I've done that in one shot, and it is. Dude,
that's a grind.
Because I was thinking, I was like, you know, if there's a chance that Sean hallucinates, like when I was like, okay, well. Was there any hallucination? I was like, well, yeah, maybe if you drive, you've been popping.
Well, yeah, buddy. Fucking, it's either he's making piss jugs or he's got urinary retention.
That's and he's just hallucinating. But then this makes way more sense that they were doing shift work on the drive. Genius.
But even though they had been driving in shifts, it depends on which report you read. Now, some of the family may have been asleep, but also they all may have been awake at the time, which
you know
makes
that's
a little
good,
bit different.
It's good. It's good road trip etiquette, though, right? It's like you never like. I get it if you're in the back seat, you get a pass. But if you're in the front seat with a driver, you got to stay awake.
Your co-pilot,
with
them,
right?
Yeah,
your co-pilot, right? Yeah. Like you have just as important of a job, right? You got to hand them the snacks. You got to open them napkins, right? But radio up, down.
Well, you're on the radio. Listen, this is an Aussie road trip. You know they're banging some Jimmy Barnes, working class man. Nobody's sleeping. Everybody's pounding the roof and having a great time.
You know what? Realistically, I guarantee you, I bet there's no radio reception through most of the drive, so they're crushing tapes.
So they're singing
right?
it.
Hey, flip the tape.
So they're
right?
singing it.
Yeah.
No, it's for sure.
Tapes, only singing, boys. No, karaoke.
I bet you it's the Hilltop Hoods is what they're listening to. Were they around? Hoods? Were they around in 88? You ever heard, was it Nosebleed Section? That's the only song I remember. It's like a Aussie Beastie Boys group.
Oh, really?
They're good.
Oh man, I don't know. I'm thinking. Hey, listen, Jimmy Barnes is something else. If you've never heard of Jimmy Barnes, you need to look him up.
So they may or may not have been listening to Jimmy Barnes in the early wee morning hours, between sometime between 2:45 a.m. and 5:30 a.m. is when these events are when these events occurred. Now, Sean and Patrick, being in the front seat, reported noticing some type of bright light that appeared in the sky ahead of them. And Sean asked Patrick, apparently, like, it had been on their minds. This is 1988. The UFO phenomenon has begun and people know about this, that, you know, jokingly asked him perhaps, you know, hey, could that maybe be a spaceship? You know, you'd run a little low on sleep. You might want to kind of come up with these kinds of ideas. And so they decided that this light, which seemed to be in front of them and not far, they decided to try and chase and catch up to the object.
Secondly, is like, to be honest, I'm like, that point in the story, I was like, when I read that and like listened to that, I'm like, isn't that what anyone does? Because if I've ever been with anyone at night and I see any kind of weird light, I go, is that a spaceship? Literally every time, UFO, and it'll be a plane. I'll be like, ah, oh. But my first thing is always like, spaceship, UFO, go, it's right there.
I suppose they saw the light and they probably judged that they could catch it.
Let's not go over there. Yeah. Let's stay away. Let's actually go in the opposite direction of that. I'm not sure what it is. It's kind of weird.
I think it seemed to be positioned like on the straight, like ahead of them. So it wasn't too far. I think they judged it within like catching distance, which also seems kind of iffy because it's like you have your entire family in the car and you want to like speed up to like try and catch something. Like I guess they were traveling at highway speeds. I don't know what the speed limit is on that, or even if they have a speed limit there.
There's no cops out there.
Let's also imagine who's behind the wheel. It's probably one of the either 21 or 24 year old boys.
It's like, Sean. He's 21. Yeah.
Let's fucking go, boys. Jimmy Barnes is bumping. Let's fucking do it.
Mom's in the back.
Yeah.
White knuckled in the back.
Yeah.
What they reported seeing as they kind of got near it and they took in a bit more details about this craft was they said that this light that they were observing was shaped like an egg and it seemed to be moving just back and forth, just tiny bits just above the road.
And when they say egg. I have to interrupt you here because they never say egg. If you watch any interview with these people, they go, well, what was the shape? And like, they all sit like dead silent, just staring off in the distance. And then one of them reluctantly goes like, I don't know, like this.
Right. Yeah. They make the motion about like, it's some kind like, of circular like, shape. Fucking,
circle, teardrop, egg, like just say any shape that it's close to. He's like, it's hard to explain.
I think the reports that about this case, like if you go into research this case, it's like people say egg, but they kind of get that from the shape that he draws in the air in the interview. And then also the fact that they said, like they described that the light was kind of white on the outside and then on the inside was like, it was a bit more yellowish. So a fried egg, I suppose.
And,
I don't know.
Well, like, I kind of thought of it as like a teardrop shape, to be honest, from like the descriptions and stuff and how it moved that we'll get into later. Like I kind of picture it in my head based on his circular and kind of drawing down that, like, it was kind of like a teardrop, like a sperm kind of shape. Maybe not so long of a tail, but.
So as they approach.
Teardrop and sperm are two very different shapes, Adam.
I don't think so.
What are you talking about?
I mean.
Nah, brain's the one who puts the star shape in the square tail. In the square hole.
Yeah, but without the tail, it's like a fucking egg. It's going back to the egg.
Teardrop. Yeah. I'll stick with teardrop then.
that's good. I think.
So apparently, what happened is that this shape, as they got nearer to it, decided to come towards them and started maneuvering closer to their car. And Sean actually had to swerve and maneuver around this object. And with this sudden motion, it pulled him over into the opposite lane. And they say that he narrowly avoided crashing into another oncoming vehicle, which was like another car or truck that was pulling a caravan, a trailer behind it.
If everyone wasn't awake at this point already, I would have said, motherfucker fell asleep. Motherfucker fell asleep at the wheel, right? Ah, there's an alien or something, but right? Just as covering a truck. But the problem is everyone was already up and everyone was seeing this, right? And from the description, what I kind of pictured is as they're tailing this thing kind of just starts left and right as it's moving and then seemingly turns and just comes at them. He swerves. And then whatever this thing is, just pivots turns and is now on them, like tracking, following them.
Right. So as they swerved to maneuver around the light went past them and then pulled a U-turn, like Brayden said, and now is seems to be pursuing their car at a pacing speed behind them. So Sean, you know, checking the rearview mirror, realizes that this craft is turning around and coming back in their direction again. Sean guns it and says that he got up to, in the reports, I think he got up to about, what, 200 kilometers per hour?
And let's, two things about going 200 kilometers an hour. One, super fast, super dangerous.
In what kind of car?
In a Ford Telestar. Everyone knows every car made before 2001 at about 160, just death rattle. Just like,
Type of car. If you forgot what it looks like, Google it right now.
Well, it's not built for speed. I'll tell you that.
Picture it trying to go 200K and it's not. It's about to fall apart.
Because it's like, we know that the family made a conscious decision, like, we're going to follow this fucking light. So they're speeding up to follow it.
But it's not like it's deviating off, right? It's like one light.
They made the conscious decision, we're going to follow this fucking light. And it's almost like the light realizes, hey, these motherfuckers are following us, does a quick, like an evasive maneuver, and fucking's like, now who's following who, motherfucker?
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's like, maybe they would have just left them be if they wouldn't have made it obvious that they were trying to follow them.
Or maybe put some sort of conscious thought
out there, yeah,
to it, because that kind of
all of a sudden you're
into
a threat. You're like, why are you following us? You're a threat. They see us. What are we going to do?
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's a good point. As we kind of get into some other points of this theory, I've got some other points that'll kind of tie into that.
So apparently now before, depending on which reports you read, a little bit after he decided to go, full throttle down the road, Sean performed several U-turns in the road, but the objects seemed to stay on their tail the entire time.
Locked on target. Yeah.
And during one of these, one of them trying to escape, they keep driving. They said that there was this large, the entire family heard like a large thump on the roof. Thump or thunk.
Dude, that would be fucking terrifying. Could you imagine you're like, gives me a little anxiety thinking about it. Something's in pursuit of you and you just hear like, you're like, it's on the roof. Something's on the roof.
Think about is there a more vulnerable position to be in? You're seated, strapped into this moving vehicle and something's on top of you.
No.
Like what are you going to fucking do? You're doing 200 fucking kilometers. It's not like you can just jump out. Like, oh man, that'd be terrifying.
Well, it's like, what do you do? Stop? Right?
Yeah.
I'd have to.
What you do apparently is you do what Faye Knowles do and you reach outside to feel on top of the car to find out what had landed on your roof.
It's that everybody knows. That's like sticking your hand underneath your bed.
Yeah. That's the second worst thing you could possibly do.
You don't fucking do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. You drop your charger at night, your charger cable at night. It's gone.
You buy a new one. You buy a fucking new one.
Wait till morning, buy a new one. I don't even
step off my bed. I stand on it. I take a running leap to the door.
Yeah.
Every time.
You've installed some monkey bars so you don't have to touch the floor. You can kind of get out of your room.
A big swing out there. It's just one of them pull-up bars that attaches to the... I grab it and swing myself out of the bedroom.
Box springs straight on the ground. No bedroom. Yeah.
Then I turn ready Eliminate for a fight, butt naked.
Yep.
Right? Just ready. So same thing, yeah. If you hear a thud on the roof while you're driving...
So he sticks his arm out of the vehicle to see what's on the roof.
Faye does. She sticks her arm out onto the roof and... She recalls finding something up there that wasn't supposed to be up there. And she described it as feeling either a spongy or rubbery and hot to the touch.
It's like the mist.
A hot fucking sponge suction cup, like on top of your roof. Now, one of the things I couldn't quite figure out was Go ahead.
Well, just like she says it's hot and it's spongy. So it's almost like at the same time, like what else can be hot and spongy? Like flesh.
Yeah. Oh, so I also think of like right away, I kind of thought of like, this is maybe some sort of living tissue. Yeah. Right? And then secondly, that I couldn't quite figure out was at this point in time, by the accounts I was reading, it's like they're still in pursuit. So I wasn't sure, or something's still in pursuit of them. So I wasn't sure if this is, you know, a separate object or if this is the same object and they've lost the sight of the light for momentarily, right? I wasn't sure.
So when Faye retracted her arm back into the car after touching whatever was on the roof,
it was gone.
Yeah. Her hand got just a bone.
Fucking blood spurting out.
What is it? No. You know that warmth was her own blood. That's what she
Yeah. When she retracted her arm back in, it was complete. It was intact. But it also was sporting a coating of some type of strange black dust is what they described on her hand. And then what another...
Imagine from the descriptions, just to paint it a little picture, is like from the descriptions, I imagine if you put your hand in like a fireplace soot, right? And pulled it out, like all that just like dust particle it, where it's like as you rub it, it trying to goes from dust to like you know, the charcoal-y on your skin and fingers.
And so now this is when the family experienced a sensation. They all described experiencing the same thing, that they felt that the car was actually being physically lifted off the highway.
Oh, shit.
Like the car was being lifted up. I assume it's like when you kind of go over one of those, you go over a hill a little bit, that you know, you
feel
kinda
your stomach kind of go up.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can stomach kind of drops.
Yeah.
I mean, not a very big bump at 200 kilometers an hour would probably give you that sensation.
Well, the other thing is too, is like, cause I thought about that. When I was reckless when I was younger, and you're driving that fast, sometimes with your suspension, you kind of get that like that feeling when you're driving that fast, like especially when you're driving a 96 Astra van with no shocks, like you get this like really like you're almost flying above the road. But so I kind of thought it was that, except they all describe being dropped right after.
So the sensation only lasted for a brief moment, and then they said the car felt like it was suddenly just dropped to the ground, and either during like when they were being pulled up or right after they were dropped, they said that they reported also some type of strange smell and some type of like a gray smoke or a thick mist actually filling the car.
This is the mist.
Yeah, which all of this actually preceded what is one of the events that is mostly described as probably the strangest, is that they all recall like their voices in the car, because I'm sure they're all screaming at each other at this point. All their voices seem to, they describe them slowing down or sounding low pitched.
Oh, man. Whoa. A bunch of,
yeah. I want a fucking dart in your neck.
Crikey. Throw another shrimp on the Barbie. Rise of Brides.
It's one of the descriptions of one of the sons said, he said, it's not though the voices were coming out of us, like deep and slow. It's almost like when you talk, your voice slowed from leaving your, like after leaving your mouth, like the sound, just like, whoa, like, but it wasn't them talking slow. Like he's like, I don't know how to explain it.
It's interesting because remember, like, I don't know, we probably talked about it, but like how they feel like being dropped after, right?
Yeah.
After the sensation, it's like, you know, everything's slowing down. So maybe maybe there's missing time there. Like maybe they were actually taken and then dropped after they were done with whatever they needed to do with them.
Well, like, one of the boys, I think it's Wayne. One of them describes, he goes, at this point, he's like, it felt like my brain was being sucked out of my head. He described that in the car, right? Ooh. He said that was the feeling that he got during this moment when things slowed down.
I get like that when I drink a fucking Slurpee too fast too, though.
That's
exact
true.
Same feeling.
Yeah.
Exact same thing.
The other interesting thing is like, if this is some sort of like time distortion, we've seen this before, right? In a couple of the other case files we've talked about, where these people, like the, you know, the bullet slowing down, or if this is like some sort of affected area where this happens, right? So it's like, if someone was watching from the outside, would they see this car moving ripping down the road, then all of a sudden just kind of like coming to a slow, right? It's, I don't know. It's interesting.
And as the car landed after the sensation of them being picked up, it hit the ground hard enough, it hit the road far enough that they said the back right tire actually burst.
So it's well, like, dropped.
Well, it's fully loaded. You got three full-grown adults. You've got
two digs, right?
And you got a fucking top full of luggage, right? Like the car's fully loaded. So yeah,
Well, but not only that too. Like this, we've said that this car is on record doing 200 kilometers an hour here. A lot of these vehicles' tires aren't fucking rated for that type of speed either.
The tires would be
fucking compromised, yeah. Right? Like these tires are ready to fucking go.
And yeah, they're not meant to Dukes of Hazzard.
No.
Now, after the tire popping, Sean reports a brief period of him actually blacking out. So either after this time, he remembers waking and running from the car, like pretty much waking up and then everybody exiting out the car. They had pulled over to the side somehow and they decided that the best course of action was to leave the car. And then they were going to go hide.
For themselves.
And then the entire family was going to go ahead and take shelter in some nearby bushes to try and evade the whatever was seemed to be following the vehicle. Now, they stayed within these bushes and they left the car for about what they said was probably around 15 minutes. It's probably 15 or 20 minutes maybe. And then that time after waiting that long and nothing happening, they went back and returned to the car and then they changed the tire since the object that had been harassing them seemed to be gone, had either lost interest or had left the area. And they changed their tire and they just went on their way, all sufficiently traumatized of what had just happened. So the family drove on to the city of Seduna. It could be Kaduna. We had to do the Italian cities, and now we have to do the Australian cities. I hope somebody's going to correct me. But they drove 600 kilometers nonstop to Seduna, and they contacted the police from there to actually, right after this happened, to report the incident. Now, there's kind of a funny thing is like whether
I bet they didn't sleep for that last 600.
No. Yeah, there is some debate because there is a town between that like halfway between where they encountered the craft and Seduna. Apparently, like I guess 300 kilometers, they could have stopped at another town, but they kept going. They kept going and they got to that place, and then they decided to they stopped at like a roadside motel for the morning or whatever, and then decided to give a call to the police and report what had just happened. So I guess the officer that was responsible for taking their call was named Sergeant Jim Furno, and he noticed right off the bat that the family was noticeably distraught. He kind of compared it that this family seemed almost like they had lost, like their emotional state was similar to a family that had lost someone close to them. Like they were all
fucking
just kind of
grandma on the roof. Gone.
when they actually got they had the family come in and they had them take their reports and the police were actually there and able to gather forensic evidence, material from the car which they had reported that hadn't been there before. They did a tape test, which I guess is like, they just took a piece of tape and then they just kind of like slapped it on different portions of the car to like lift up
any fingerprints
stuff. Yeah.
Alien prints.
And the police actually recommended that the family contact the UFO Research Australia or UFORA, who were keen to kind of do their own forensic testing in the car. They had people who had dealt with these UFO reports in the past and, had more experience with this. The police told them, like, yeah, go contact these people.
That's awesome. Yeah. That is awesome.
Right? Because I was going to say, like, not only to me, I'm like, that's not a one-off. That means there's enough people coming with weird stuff where they're like, you should talk to these people.
Yeah, this isn't our expertise.
And the, like, and not only that too, it's like, this just happened. How many cases do we hear of where it's like, oh, the UFO investigators talked to them fucking 65 years later.
Yeah.
Right? Like, this is brand new. This is fresh. They're getting the, like, the firsthand story, like, right away. There's no telephone game. It's like, this, like, it's a ideal situation.
Yeah. The next 36 hours would be a whirlwind of events for the Knowles family, but maybe we should take a break before getting into all of this.
Just before we get to the media circus that follows this case, we got to take a short break, grab a beer, and we'll be right back.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
We're back!
we're talking about the whirlwind of media coverage that followed the Knowles family, because this thing got out. It got out pretty quick, like almost as soon as they leaked it or they reported to the police. This somehow got leaked out to the media, and this just threw up an entire it seemed like almost every news network wanted to get in on this, because apparently the family was caught because they decided to continue their trip on to Melbourne. To Melbourne to meet with the UFO Research Australia people. They were actually going to meet with them, and then, you know, so the UFO could do their own interviews and do their, gather any evidence. You know, a fresh UFO report is a kind of, like Andrew said, this is something really exciting. You have very small window to get some accurate data to put together. And so on their way to meet with them, the family was actually caught and approached by either Frank Pangalo or a representative of his who were with Channel 7 News at the time. And they caught them at the town of Woodina. And the Channel 7 apparently offered the family $5,000, like, ooh, right then and there, for an exclusive interview that would appear on the program at the time, which was called Hinch at 7, which was a popular evening news program. This literally like hours after they had seen this, right? So they wanted the exclusive story so they could put it on the news like that night. And so, but the terms, which would be agreed to, they would pay them $5,000. And this $5,000 would include a term that involved that no other media outlet would have access to the family or their car. Ooh. So everything was going to be kept off, you know, nobody could, everything was off limits to anyone else if they went ahead and took this money.
$5,000 doesn't seem like a lot of money, in my opinion, for exclusivity.
Yeah. But honestly, though, for like, I was like, nowadays, you would not get $5,000 at all. Right, for this.
Well, there's no this exclusive story. Anything
You'd
anymore.
You'd be lucky to get fucking a couple likes on Facebook with that story.
Exactly, right? So it's like, to me, I was like, by that standard, I was like, yes, but I was like, at the same time, I get it, because you're like, we want this on Channel 7, right? This, you know, you're going to get a pinch of Hinch on 7, and this is, you're going to see this, right? That's, and nowhere else, right? This is the exclusive. So I can understand from that perspective of like these, you know, channels, because like, fuck, you turn on the news now, it's all the same shit. Doesn't matter if you just like the host, right? Which host But this is like, you have these fucking compelling stories that they have the exclusive. No one else talks about it. And they're not allowed to talk about it. So I can see that. And $5,000. It's funny you said that you didn't think that was a lot. I was like, fuck, I would have jumped at that offer too. I would have like, $5,000. Yeah.
Well, then, yeah, you probably should have been a little bit more patient and waited, because Pangallo later reported that another news outlet had sent a representative that was right behind him for the Mike Willacy show, who's a famous news...
He's a hack.
Newsman, news anchor. and they said they would have paid $20,000 for the story. So if the family would have just waited like a couple more hours and met with that representative, they could have gotten offered $20,000.
Would they have paid
$20,000? I would have given you $20,000.
And I guarantee you that's the it was out of spite, right? Oh, what, you signed a thing? Well, we are gonna offer you $20,000.
No. That's what Pangallo said though. That's Pangallo, the guy who offered them the $5,000. He's reported that he said that they're gonna be. I mean, he wouldn't be mad about it. He'd be like.
Yeah.
Well, that's the other thing too, is he's probably bragging about it, being like, "Oh, we got such a good deal."
Trying to
justify it to his producers.
That's like, what I think too.
Somebody else would have paid 20 for this. I got it for $5. All right.
So, a mere 36 hours after this event had happened, the whole family was interviewed on the evening news, and the UFO Research Australia kind of got put out. Now they continued and tried to pursue the Knowles family to get like a sit down interview, and they went as far as trying to actually to get with the family members and get the story of their experience, and conducting interviews in between them being having sit down interviews with the Channel 7 news studios in Adelaide. Now because of the time frame. Because of the time frame that they had, like, the families were in and out with these interviews like all day, apparently, and it was really exhausting experience, you know, having to recount this traumatic experience over and over and over again. The UFO investigators, unfortunately, were unable to get actual sit-down interviews. It was pretty much them just talking to each of the family members, like in between them going in and out of like interview rooms at the Channel 7 studios. Now, And then afterwards, when the UFO Research Australia approached the family, you know, formally, like, can we just have like some of your time to do a sit down interview? The family actually declined the interview with the UFO investigators because they pretty much said, you know, we're exhausted, like we don't want to talk about it anymore.
Done.
And then they left some of the reports say that it's just like an undisclosed location, but they probably just didn't tell anyone like where they were going. But this undisclosed location was actually a family friend's home in Melbourne. What did I say?
Melbourne.
Where the family was actually contacted by another news outlet, you know, everybody's favorite, you know, newspaper rag, The Sun. At the time. And they were contacted by one Suzanne McDonald, who was reporting for the Melbourne Sun at the time. And she actually requested, you know, I guess Sean was the one, the 21-year-old who had been driving, was the one to answer the phone and answer for the family on this request for a sit-down interview. But he said that he would be happy to do that on the condition of being paid $5,000 for his story.
This is day rate.
Well, to be honest, I'm like, this, that part of the story, I'm like, this is a fucking 21-year-old. Could you imagine a 21-year-old, like, someone's just like, here's $5,000. You're just like, holy shit. Like, even split with your family, like, you're like, holy shit, $1,000, right?
Mom's pulling the strings.
But then you're like, you get another story. You're like, yeah, I'll do it for $5,000 again. That's what they paid me last time to do it. Like, this seems like a 21-year-old's response of being like, I'll do it for $5,000.
Well, yeah, but if they're like, if he's like, yeah, I'll do it for $5,000, they say no. And be like, okay, I'll take fucking $12. Just whatever I need, you know. Doesn't matter.
He probably thought, because of how quick people were kind of pursuing the story, that this was going to be a regular getting paid. So I could see him being like hardballing, like, yeah, $5,000. Then no, I'm not doing it. Thinking that another call was coming.
Yeah, and the story appeared in a number of newspapers and a number of news programs and stuff like that. It actually kind of got out, and it was reported. It kind of flew all over the place within the next couple of days. Like, you know, family reports being attacked by UFO headlines, like, makes for good
UFO,
you
know, attack
headlines or whatever. Yeah. You know, the Sun declined to pay them $5,000. They declined the interview. They said, no, well, no then. And so you might think that, okay, maybe this family, it's just them, apparently, at the beginning. You're like, it's just them, as we told you. Like, it's, you know, maybe that other car that they almost swerved into that had been pulling a caravan down the opposite lane. Somebody would be able to find them. Nobody's been able to find them. Nobody knows who they are. But apparently, there was a truck driver who is later identified as Graham Henley, who was driving along that same stretch of road. And they estimated, like, the distance, like, between him and the Knowles family is probably, he was about 10 to 15 kilometers ahead of them. And he actually reported, when people tried to, you know, suss out, like, exactly what was going on, because I think he actually was with them. Like, he met with the family, or he kind of pulled into the same roadhouse as the family, like, just a little bit before they did, and saw them being distraught about what they had seen. You know, and some reporters managed to track him down as well. And he said that actually he described seeing a glowing object similar, or, you know, a glowing object in the direction of where the Knowles family had been behind him. You saw some kind of strange, unidentifiable.
Yeah, and light. I can give you the rest of the story for another $5,000. <All
right. laughs> Yeah. Or are they charging $2,500?
Yeah.
This is a case of, you're not really sure. Like, you have an entire family in the car. Something happens. They see some type of light. Now you have things that could possibly, like, your first go-tos as a skeptic, you're going to be like, well, you know, maybe it was, it was a light. Like, maybe it was just like a car headlight coming in the opposite direction. And then you could add another car, like, you know, just pulled up behind them and they started going. And you're tired. It's 13 hours. They've been driving constantly on the road. Early morning hours.
And I would buy into all those as easily explanations for the situation if there wasn't already a fucking light possible UFO thing plaguing this fucking area for, like, the last 100 years. Like, this story's been told so many times with the Min Min lights.
Right.
Yeah.
Right? Like, we've heard this so many times. Like, and it's the exact same situation where in the outback, you've got a ball of light that's sometimes white, orange, red, that's following these cars. Now, can we explain the Min Min lights, you know, with a scientific background and, you know, potentially it being a mirage or something like that? Potentially, but, like, we've had these UFO stories for how long in this area?
Yeah.
Well, I think the Min Min lights are a different part of Australia, but that doesn't mean that they couldn't get to the south.
I mean, I think most of the Min Min Light reports were in Queensland.
Yes, so like the other side of the country, but exactly.
But there have been other ones, right? And if it is a UFO, what would the difference be for a UFO to travel from one area of fucking Australia to the other?
And yeah, and also you have the fact of, like, actual, you know, Faye reporting having actual physical contact with whatever was on top of their car, like this spongy, rubbery material that you reached out there and she, you know, she reported touching. Now, I could be like, okay, maybe, like, were you touching, like, a piece of your luggage on the car? Like, I'm not exactly sure 100% how their luggage stuff was arranged on top of the car. I don't think they had one of those, what is it, Thule or whatever, like the little
toy
shells. Yeah. Like, yeah, it's that you don't have one of those. Like, I don't think they had one of those. Like, like Andrew said, you know, National Lampoon style, was it just, like, lashed down on top?
They
just
had bungee cables, like, just stretched over the fucking thing.
And were you just touching a suitcase or something like that? But she, you know, I am assuming that she knew, like, what she would be touching if she were up there. So this was out of the ordinary as to what she expected to touch out there. She said it was warm, and she said it was warm enough that, like, she figured that she should have been burned or something, like, when she touched it, like, it was hot enough for her to kind of probably either, like, you know, jerk her hand back or, you know, quickly and pull it back in, probably expecting to be burned.
Let me ask you this, Dan.
Yeah.
Quick question for you.
Sure.
You're sitting in the backseat of your car and you go to reach up on the roof and you feel a fucking even a just a warm, spongy, wet something that just landed on your roof, how fast do you recoil your hand?
Oh, I pull that back real fast, right? Yeah,
like, I'd be like, ah, there's something on there.
And then
it's
you
warm.
Shake it.
Especially you come back with like soot and shit on your hand. You'd be like, what the fuck is that?
Honestly, in my head, soot's the best case scenario to come back on your hand in that situation. This is Australia.
Yeah.
That could have been a giant anything on your roof. Yeah. That's poisonous and wants to kill you. Like the
substance that they're pulling back in off of hand, like I could be like, okay, maybe like you're driving on a desert road. Like if you put your hand outside the car and you touch on top of the car, it's gonna have something on your hand. Like you're gonna have dust, you're gonna have whatever, I would assume. Touching the rubbery thing is what kind of that, that's something really weird that it'd be like, that's not normal, you know. When I think about it, like Brayden said, like you're touching like a living thing. It's like a dolphin. If anybody's ever touched like a dolphin or like an underwater, you know, dolphin or a whale or whatever, like if you ever touch their skin, you know, it feels like that kind of. That's what I imagine in my head. It's something like that. You know, maybe it's just a giant flying alien rubber ducky. I don't know. Like just sitting on top of the car.
Well, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was thinking that for me, I was like, you know, they're getting tailed by this thing. I had two thoughts. I said like, okay, why would these things be going to Australia? And then I thought, you know, like Australia's got to have one of the most it's got to have some of the most unique biodiversity on Earth that you can't find shit anywhere else. Fucking deadly plants, deadly animals, reptiles, you know what I mean? So it's like, it would make sense if these things are coming to collect, you know, the manzanita bushes in the area, that they'd be coming to Australia more often than the rest of the world, because a lot of these things you can find, everywhere, different versions. But in Australia, they kind of have like isolated stuff. And then I was thinking of these lights when they turned around. If that light is pursuing them still, and whatever this is, suction cups their roof, because that's what I imagined this sponge thing was doing, is it actually like, gripped the car and lifted it up, right? This, whatever this sponge thing that was on top, it wasn't a light, it wasn't a hover. And then made me think of like, is this some sort of like, you know, unique craft that is made of biological material, right?
It's a living craft.
Like some sort of, exactly, some sort of living craft that picks up their car, because maybe, and hypothetically, say, whatever species this is, or whatever alien or whatever technology this is coming, this is the first encounter. And maybe it truly thought that these vehicles were organisms, right? Like we're some sort of creature. It picks it up, realizes that it's a vehicle, drops it, right? Boom. As it starts to realize that the occupants are inside, then it seems to fuck off.
So it gave it a little taste.
A little lick test. Yeah, with its spongy tongue.
And there are a couple other when a number of other outlets like got a hold of this story and like kind of went into it as well. They had some kind of experts lend their views about possible explanations about what could have done it. One explanation that I liked was there is I found out that in Australia, whirlwinds and sandstorms apparently have the nicknames of Willy Willys.
Willy Willys, yeah, that's right.
I didn't know that.
That fits, yeah. That
fits, makes sense.
I had a good laugh for about 3 minutes about what it was and exactly
it's a
Willy
Willy.
I had to look.
Get indoors! It's a Willy Willy.
I read it in an Australian periodical. I read it in an old print magazine that they wrote it, and I was like, a Willy Willy. I was like, is that a real thing? Is that what they really call it? And that sent me down a whole rabbit hole of people like being this. I looked up some internet posts, and people were like, nobody in Australia calls a Willy Willy. And I was like, but it's printed right there in Australia. It's not like an American like said that, oh, these are also called Willy Willys. It's like, no, this is an Australian periodical written by Australian people. It's called a Willy Willy. Which is great. I feel like somebody was said like whirlwind, and then like an Aussie in the outback like just couldn't say whirlwind. Really,
yeah,
whirlwind, 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 and it's just
stuck ever since.
Yeah.
Okay. Australia's Braden coined it a Willy Willy.
Yeah, just marble mouth. Yeah. Just like
drunk Braden trying to making up words.
Yeah.
So one of the explanations is that maybe like a dust devil, a whirlwind, sent a Willy Willy, got a hold of them, like got, like they drove through it at late at night, you know, the early hours of the morning, and it got under the car and like picked it up like a little bit, is what they're saying. Like the kid was just like still booking it. Maybe he got spooked by a type of the Min Min lights, which one of the explanations is like there's a light phenomenon that happens, you know, when you're driving. It could have been I would say like it'd have to be like a bunch of things, not just one explanation for this. It could be like, you know, inverted, temperature inverted lights. The scientific explanations sound weirder than just saying aliens. Like,
this is one of those ones where it's like, you know, you try to, you know, Occam's razor, whatever the simplest explanation is. But then when you start to be like, yeah, a whirlwind of Willy Willy picked up the vehicle. It's like, no, there's no fucking way. It would have had to been so fucking goddamn windy out for that to pick up a vehicle.
Right. So that's an explanation I liked mostly for just the Willy Willy part. I thought that was funny. Another one is there was a lecturer from the University of Wollongong. It's a real place, I guess.
Wollongong.
I swear to God, I read some of these names on these. I'm like, is this a real place?
Well, there's a place in Australia we talked about before called Humpty Doo. So anything's possible.
Yeah, I'm like, are you just making these up as we go along? Like, I feel like somebody was just like driving along. I think it's funny, like the farther away you get from the, you know, the more populous city is, like the weirder their names get on the things. I felt like they just didn't care. Like they got to these towns and they just named them whatever. Like, well, let's just name this town as stupid as possible. Some of them are
indigenous names.
Right. That's what I was going to say. It's like a lot of these are indigenous. Yeah. A lot of these are indigenous
what
names.
What you said is they're stupid. That's what you said.
Yeah.
And you said, no one cares about these stupid names.
That's how I felt originally about it. I felt like somebody was saying that. I realized, I was like, no, a lot of these names come from indigenous cultures in the area that, you know, that named these, and these mean real things in their language. Yeah. So, you know, I learned a little bit and I corrected myself and I put myself in a different mind space. And I was like, yes, these make
just
a lot more sense.
Just in the last 5 minutes,
holy shit, people learn and grow. Is that crazy? That's so nuts. Yeah. Oh my God.
I wonder what part of this Braden's going to clip.
You had a lecturer, Glenn Moore, put forth the idea that perhaps it was like a meteor that landed in the vicinity, and that this could have accounted for the glow that they had seen. And then also it said that perhaps like this would have accounted for the strange smell that the family reported, smelling in their car, like this strange like burning or like I think they said maybe like an asphalt kind of smell.
But this thing chased, didn't it? They did U-turns and this thing followed them.
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering. I'm like, was it like coming straight at them? Was it like this meteor like coming straight at them, like glancing off the car and then going in behind them or something? Like, it'd just be really crazy. Like, that's a real stretch, I think.
It could have ensued some type of like panic, a little bit of hysteria, and they're just like, oh fuck, it's after us. And when it's actually not, it's just in the vicinity of them, and then they just take off.
A little sleep deprived hysteria.
Sleep deprived. Yeah.
Yeah. And I keep wanting to go and be like, you know, maybe there's just another, they saw the light, like perhaps they saw the meteorite, like maybe that was coming in, that went past them, like it went. Maybe it came in low and they thought it was, you know, again, early hours in the morning, a little bit tired, swerved to get out of the way because it was coming at them. And then when they pull back on the road, they look back and maybe there's just another pair of headlights like behind them, like car. And that car is probably freaking out because they just saw the car in front of them speed over into the other lane and then pull back over.
For a meteorite.
And so as they pull over to the side or whatever, like, you know, they took off and then they probably, you know, accelerated, pulled off to the side of the road. The car just keeps going past and it just doesn't ever think about it. But I feel like that story got so much traction that somebody should have, you know, somebody would have picked up and be like, no, that was me in my car or whatever. But then again, you have the caravan that apparently, or the other car that they swerved into, those people never said anything. Those people never came forward because it would have seemed like that was something you would have remembered. Like just a news story that appeared like, you know, 36 hours after, you had just almost had a head-on collision with another vehicle, you'd probably remember it. So
you would hope.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah, it's a whole bunch of strange things that happen. And then, but the thing is, like, after this, family, like, almost, like, never spoke of it, like, ever again. Like, it's just, like, they never recalled the story. Like, it was enough to be, like, they went on that one news program. And you could pull that clip up on YouTube of them actually going on to the news program.
Watching that, like, I do not watch that and think, and this is, you're looking at these people, you're watching them this, and knowing this is 36 hours after this event. They seem like still in shock. They, when they're recounting it, like, they don't strike me as lying about anything because they don't really have any really good answers for anything. They just kind of tell, and then they're like, they're asked, and they're like, I don't really know how to explain it. Like, I don't, like, they're at a loss for words for every little portion. And to me, I'm like, if you're a lot of the time, I mean, if I were to believe this is a hoax and this family got together and hoaxed, you think there would be a little bit more charismatic to the lie. You know what I mean? Like, if you're like, oh, I'm going to lie. Oh,
a little
oh.
more theatrics. Yeah, you're like, up a little bit.
Hey, let's call the police and let's do this hoax. You think you would have a better, like, a little more to it? Because they're just sit there. Like, you watch them. They don't seem like they're acting. They genuinely seem shy and like just not knowing what to say. Like, it's, I believe them. I believe something happened to them when I watched that interview.
This is one of those cases that I look at and it's like, I'm really disappointed that the UFO researchers like didn't get a hold of the family first. Like they weren't able to get their sit down interviews done, before they got put into the media blender. Like they got put mm-hmm. into the evening news, like, is trying to pick out all of the parts that only the parts are going to be like interesting. And then when you ask the family, that family has like no idea because they've just been like, you know, you've been driving for how long? And like, you just got them off the road and they like, they're just like, you bring them in there, you know, they do all the makeup, you do everything, set them up in this studio and all this junk. And it's like, rather would have just had them sit down with some UFO researchers who are genuinely interested in what they experienced and kind of to get them in a more comfortable setting. Like, I just wish that events would have unfolded differently, like that would have happened. Because I feel like even then, like back in the 80s, like UFO researchers, and I feel like even like Australian UFO researchers had like a better handle. It was still like, you know, you still had your, there was some credibility in the field, even though some today you could argue that some do have more or less credibility. But, you know, there are a lot more, I would contend absolutely 100% there are a lot more shysters in the UFO thing than there were back then. Maybe proportionally, I don't know. But I feel like that if the UFO researchers would have got there, we would have had a lot more like concrete information to kind of go off, at least like a single narrative, as opposed to like just different things that got picked up out of the story. Like Brayden said, like, you know, it was shaped like an egg. They never actually said that, you know, or that, you know, they just kind of made like a vague motion with his hands about what it looked like, on the thing. And they didn't have a lot. Yeah. They didn't have a lot of answers on their interview, like on their, you know, live interview with the news on the news program. And I really wish like this would have went in there, as even though today it is still talked about, still remarked on, I just feel like there was a missed opportunity that maybe stuff could have been more enlightening if actual researchers who had dealt with this stuff before actually on the scene.
It's a huge plus that the, after listening to the account, the authorities recommended them to talk to UFO researchers, because I'll tell you right now, you went into any RCMP station in Canada, they will never give you that. They will never be like, hey, you should go talk. Have you called MUFON? Have you talked to a local MUFON representative? Never. That's never going to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
So that to me was really an interesting that the police, because to me, that points to that there's enough of these weird things happening that they've reached out and they have contacts of who to talk to. This isn't a one-off thing. Like, because like, if you, to me, I would think it gives a little more substance to this for me, because I go, well, what else do the police there know that they're, when people come in, they're recommending them to go talk to these experts, right? I found that quite interesting.
Yeah, and plus the fact that it's like in the whole, like, you know, they offered him $5,000 and they said nobody can print your story, or you can't do your interview with anybody else, and they can't touch the car. And it's like, even though the police took you know, from their stuff, they took samples from the car and nothing really came of it. But
they found some ash.
Well, there's ash on the roof and in the interior, and they took both and ended up, from what I read, they actually sent it to a guy who worked at NASA of some kind. And the only thing that came back was the substances on the exterior and interior of the car were different, but that there was nothing else said.
It's the outside was different from the inside.
It was
No, I didn't take it as that. I took it as the substances on the outside and inside were different in the sense of different from what we have on Earth.
Okay. It's a great way to interpret.
It would be interesting to get if there like was still like a vial of this black ash and actually do like a full analysis, print it out,
right,
all the elements, what's in it. Was it perhaps maybe a meteorite? Maybe it was like some type of sky burst or something, and it like fell on the car. Like, who knows? Like, because that's all it was. There was the jelly like tentacle thing, spongy thing. She touched it. There was the dust. There was the feeling of being picked up and dropped. But we don't have anything that we can test now. But it is an interesting encounter in the fact that they never pursued the full, they didn't get the book, they didn't get the movie, they didn't. They just never really talked
about it. They got $5,000.
$5,000, never really talked about it again, and probably scarred for the rest of their life, whatever happened to them that night. Mm-hmm. It's a cool one. UFO attack. Not too many of those around.
Yeah.
Not too many.
But like Andrew said, it's weird that the second they showed intent to this thing showed intent back.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, they're lucky they just didn't become another Frederick Valentich. They didn't just disappear off the face of the earth. You know, you actually had, you know, they made it through it and they fucking booked it out of the thing. It's just one of those strange one-offs that are always fun to look at. Like, even if there were some, you know, if there were a solid explanation as to what occurred, like Zell said, something happened, but it's still a puzzle, like what actually happened. And unless you have somebody, you know, one of those, the car that they swerved into, or somebody else who had happened to been on the road that night, come forward and tell us what actually happened or they saw, either to back up their story or to, you know, to put it in a different light. Well, you know, you might never know about what it is. It'll just stay a fun mystery.
Boom. Cool case. Yeah. Let us know what you think. Do you live in this region? Is there something else that we don't know about? Like the Min Min Lights?
Are there more fun names? More fun names?
Is this maybe more supernatural than E.T.? Is there some type of flying cryptid?
That's the other thing that I kind of thought of too, was that maybe whatever was the light was pursuing whatever was on top of the roof. If it wasn't two in the same luggage. Thing.
Wait, so there's two separate entities? There's something on the roof and there's stalking it?
Yeah, the spongy thing is being followed by the light.
By the light, right? I wasn't sure of that because they never said in their interview that the light disappeared. Like, it wasn't like, they were like, where's the light? All of a sudden, when I was reading this and listening to their accounts, it sounds like the light was still in pursuit of them. Then something's on top of their car. Boom. She feels it. Screaming, the car gets lifted, the car drops, the light and whatever disappear, they go off, they blow the tire, go in the ditch.
Maybe they were picking something up, but maybe that thing got loose and was trying to take the family, and then the light was something they pursuing it.
Maybe
catching them from the thing.
Yeah. Yep.
And then so the thing was suction cupped to the roof, yep, and they got picked up in the air when they pulled it off. And then the thing let go with a car and drop.
Oh, that's a good... Yeah. And because where else would some sort of interstellar predator, you know, traveling the vastness of space go than other than Australia, right?
Australia.
Absolutely. Easy.
Right? Does Australia have thinner ozone?
It's slowly regrowing, but the ozone there is still much thinner and you can get scorched in a second.
So maybe that's that was the entry point for these.
Put a fucking rift in the ozone when it entered.
Yeah,
because I think that's actually when the peak happened, somewhere in the '80s of
the ozone is what protects us from the.
Well, because the they burn up
intergalactic the, predators.
Yeah, they burn up coming in, right?
Right.
So they can't.
Because what's ozone?
Right? That was why it was burnt. It was all. That's why they got the dust, because it was burnt coming in.
Burnt
right?
from
the friction. Right. It was. It has some sort of organic flesh that was charbroiled as it was coming into the as it was coming through the ozone into our atmosphere. Right. When she touched it, gets all that.
I would not want to meet the organism that can survive. Closed. Atmospheric reentry. Yeah. Like I would, and has a hunger for human
cars
for 1984 blue Telstars. I don't want to ever meet that on a dark Australian highway.
Interesting thought, though.
Awesome. Yeah. Fun case. All right. We never talked about theory of the week, so this week we're not going to give one.
Well, I got one.
You got one?
Yeah, I got one.
Well, is it you? If it's you, you better shut the fuck up right now.
No. Shut the fuck up. You know, easy way for you to get a theory of the week. Head to iTunes, Spotify. Leave us a nice 5-star review. You like the show? It's an easy way, free way to help the show.
Let us know.
Let us know. You know, pump our tires and give us a 5-star review. Like this beauty. Irfan401 from the UK, your theorite of the week. He sent in a 5-star review that says, life-changing podcast. I cannot believe my luck at finding the podcast. I've been listening for a few months now, and it has changed my life exponentially. I have grown in height to over six inches. I have lost 50 pounds and I am developing the chiseled features of a Greek god. Women find me irresistible to the point of gathering in crowds outside my home. My income has doubled and my health has become outstanding. All this after just listening to 3 episodes of the show.
Yeah, perfect.
Excellent gang of presenters and always great topics. Keep up the good works from Adrian from Wales.
Boom, yeah. Adrian.
Hilarious. We've had a couple of emails like that.
Yeah.
It must be true.
It's a common effect. Everybody on Patreon.
You think people would go on the internet and just lie about these things? Like, come on. Yeah.
Do you want your life to exponentially get better too? Join us on Patreon. Patreon.com/AlienTheoriesPodcast. You'll grow in height. You'll lose weight.
Adrian, could you send us in a before and after picture so we can put them up on the live stream, please?
Yeah. You know what? There's tons of people right now who had made all of these New Year's resolutions to get in shape, to make more money. It's super simple. You join Patreon and they all come true.
Boom. Yeah. Well, here's that's it. I don't know if you've realized this, but if you've been watching this for long enough, you've seen us slowly get balder and uglier because we're sacrificing all our essence to you to make you better people.
Yeah.
All right. That's the sacrifice that's what we do.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's what we do.
It might. You think I hurt my back? You think my back's hurt? That's sympathy pain from all the sore backs of our Patreon supporters who no longer have sore backs since they've signed up.
You're like Jesus. You take everyone's pain.
Yes.
Yeah. Exactly. You think that neat pink light in Braden's new recording studio is from that little, from the actual neon sign? No, it's the dark crystal. And the dark crystal is sapping his essence and we store it and then we broadcast it over into our podcast.
Yeah.
Into our podcast and send it on to you.
All of this
to
rejuvenate for your entertainment.
Right, yeah. and our Skeksis lords, like we do that.
Yes. At our top tier for Patreon, you actually get a vial of theorical spring water. Okay, theorical spring water will cure you from all your fucking ailments. And that's top tier. So let us know. We'll send it your way.
It's not just Braden's sweat in a bag.
Yeah, it's quite salty.
Not Braden's bath water. Theoretical spring water.
Yeah, and it's at the base level, water. you can still get all of these, you know, phenomenal, life-changing, you know, products for just $5 a month on our Patreon, right? Just
yes, fuck, you get it all.
Just not go. The theoretical spring water.
That's extra. Yeah. You got to pay extra for that, but
yeah, it's extra.
Yeah. So if you want to help your theorists out, you know where to go by now. You go to alientheorist.com. You hit the support tab. You can choose Patreon or Supercast. Get the show early, ad-free, all the bonus shit, and make all of your New Year's resolutions come true. This week's newest supporters, Andrew, to start us off, buddy.
this week we've got Harriet Westlake. We've got Rodolfo Monaco moving up.
That's a good name.
Doubled.
What a fucking good name.
This guy's got abs now.
Yeah. Rodolfo Monaco.
This guy's got abs now. Rodolfo's got abs now.
Yeah. You know what his name was before? Rudolph. Now it's Rodolfo Monaco. It's a cool sounding name. Ever since he joined.
Blake Stan.
Yeah.
We've got another bump up by Mac. And then another bump up by Deborah Bushy. That's exactly what I thought too.
Yeah. That Billy Joel song.
Yeah, the heart attack.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. We got Pledge by Marissa. We've got Robert Daniel Wellosin, Javier Hernandez, John Shonson, Matt Scholl,
nice.
And Lauren Andrews.
We've got Lucas Batley. We've got Beanhead. We've got John Hardesty. Hardesty?
Is that one of those?
John Hardesty. That's Alicia Hartman's dad. Mm-hmm. Got a cat, buddy.
Yevgeny Levich. And we've got Sean Johnson.
We also got Nathan Frizzle. Death Grips is online. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Search that. It's probably some company. We got Crapticular. Great name. We got Derek and Angela Martin splitting the tier. You can do that. We support it. And last but not least, we have Tori Armstrong supporting the show. Thank you very much.
Yeah, and before we leave, all promised life-changing events are must be paired with exercise, well-balanced diet
hard work,
plastic surgery,
and they'll bang and clang and eat your vitamins.
Yeah, and as we always say at the end of these things, keep those eyes on the skies.
See you next
time. Peace.